You're listening to the best of Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, the lead singer and frontwoman of the multi-million selling 90s rock band Skunk Anansie, that's Skin, she joined me on the programme to talk about her autobiography, It Takes Blood and Guts. The book tells the extraordinary story of how a gay black working class girl from Brixton called Deborah Ann Dyer would rise to become one of the most influential women in British rock, despite enduring racism, poverty and prejudice along the way. Let's just jump into the interview here.
I mean, it didn't really hit us that how successful we were till we, I think, like 1999, to be honest. And then we were like, I remember our manager said to us, well, where do you want to go and record the next record? And we were like, well, what do you mean? She goes, we can record anywhere we like. And we said, what about the Caribbean and Barbados for a laugh? She said, yeah, okay then. we thought, what? That's money, you know. Yeah. We didn't do it because obviously I don't think the record would. I mean, you need to be in a gritty place to make a gritty record, you know. You need to be in a good studio and a nice vibe and a real, you need to be in a real authentic place to make good records, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, It Takes Blood and Guts is what we're talking about here. It's the book from Skin. We're talking Skunk Anansie as well. And in the book, by the way, you've got a very candid take on racism in the UK, in the US, in Russia and South Africa, etc. And, you know, the idea that, you know, they used to talk maybe diversity. I mean, they do talk diversity now. They started, could I say, in the mid-90s. Was it multiculturalism? Is it the same thing back then?
Yeah, I mean, that was what we called it back then, multiculturalism. I can barely say it now. And also, you know, lots of words. And it was, I mean, it was just normal for us. And to be honest, we had so much to worry about, you know, as a band that looked like us, we had to be 5-6 times better than everybody else to get on the same thing. And even then, we weren't getting the same TV shows, playlist on radio. So rather than worrying about all that, we just worried about getting on. And I think in some ways, not kind of concentrating on that and analysing that and thinking about that too much, kind of just moved it out of the way for us. You know, we were very, we're political and we were very aware of ourselves. And we were very aware that nobody was going to get in our way. You know, we weren't going to stop and worry about racism and sexism, homophobia and all that kind of stuff, because then it just felt like we were just taking the weight of other people's isms and schisms on our shoulders. Mm. When actually it had taken us a long time to get the band together, and we were really happy. We were really happy with being a band, and nobody was going to take that away from us. You know, we were playing the world, and we were, you know, we had as much beer as we wanted to drink. And we were doing gigs and we were doing everything we'd ever dreamed for. So we were feeling so positive, and other people's negativities just didn't affect us really.
But by the same token,
on a day-to-day level. You know?
Yeah, but I mean, like, were a lot of your songs kind of almost visceral responses, in-your-face responses, if you like, to abuse, to racism or to inequality?
I mean, a lot of our songs were just because, I mean, for me, when people ask me why I'm political or why the songs were political, and I also say, you know, because I'm from Brixton. You know, when Brixton is a place that was underfunded, forgotten about by Thatcher government, they didn't care, they weren't interested. There were drugs, there was violence, there was prostitution, but there was also a fantastic, cultural, amazing, interested, intellectual, arty community of black people, the bedrock of Brixton that had been there since Windrush places. And so, you know, wherever you are, there's positivity and negativity. But, you know, I went through two Brixton riots, 1981 and 1995, on my doorstep, literally on my doorstep, running past my door. So, if you know, that was why I was raised in that. So that was why some of the songs have that kind of political edge, because, you know, we just saw that things weren't right. You know, in those days, we had the sus laws in Brixton, so there was a lot of police brutality. A lot of police, and they were the people that we were running away from, you know, the police and all this kind of stuff. And so that eventually kind of came into the songs, and it's just part of me and part of what I have to say. And I think, you know, as every artist has to be authentic about their own experiences and put that in their songs.
Now, in a couple of weeks' time, the 2021 Grammy Awards, the big awards for the music industry, will take place in Los Angeles. At the end of November, I was joined by Conor Deegan of Fontaines after their second album, A Hero's Death, received a prestigious Grammy nomination for Best Rock Album. The only other Irish band ever to be nominated in this category is U2. So naturally, I started by asking him how he found out that they were nominated for a Grammy.
It was a kind of a nonchalant text from our manager, actually. I got this text into our group chat and just said, lads, I've double-checked my email there, double-read it just to make sure, but it looks like you've been nominated for a Grammy. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what the hell? And after it kind of sank in, I just started sticking on tunes and dancing around my gaff on my own like a loser, like, but just ringing my parents and stuff and telling them, and it was a crazy thing, you know. I mean, I'm from Mayo, like, and Tom is as well, so it's not something that happens every day to people from Mayo, like.
Not something that happens every day to anybody, frankly, you know, one in billions. Anyway, so, okay, it isn't a major achievement in some ways. Or is it, do you see it as an achievement, or do you see it just more as a mad thing? Go for it, let's have a laugh. I mean, the award.
Yeah, I think it's a crazy thing. I suppose it is an achievement in some way, but it's more this kind of a weird spectacle for us to go to, if we get to go to them and be subjected to this strange world of celebrity and fame that we actually haven't really been subjected to before, you know. And it's going to be like a nice scientific observation of that kind of weird world.
An anthropological study for Conor Deegan. Absolutely. So basically the ceremony is in January. So what happens and where do you go and where does it happen?
Well, it's kind of up in the air right now. But if it does happen, which they're kind of half, it seems to be half promising that it will happen in person. It'll be going to the Staples Centre with no audience. It'll just be the bands there who are nominated performing. And if not, then it will be, you know, what's the word? Just for, like, on the internet?
It'll be Zoomed or whatever, here's hoping that you get to go anyway. It's the last day of January, which is just a couple of months away now at this stage of the game. So listen, congratulations, Conor, and well done. And hopefully 2021, this will be a fantastic start to it. And we can get rid of 2020 and play loads of gigs all over the place. Conor Deegan, Fontaines, as in Fontaines DC, and the current album, A Hero's Death, which is now up for a Grammy Award with all the other greats like Sturgill on his lawnmower. Thanks a million for talking to us, Conor. Good man yourself, and congratulations. Well done.
Thanks, Dave.
You're listening to the best of Dave Fanning on 2FM.